Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer. Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Nate Bucati, joined as always by the one and only Carter Augustine. We are coming from very different places today because we have a busy, busy week and a busy, busy show in the world of American soccer for you today. So I'll start out, Carter, by asking you how you're doing, man. You're back at Pinnacle Training Facility as we're recording this show today. What's up, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well, Nate. Like you said, at Pinnacle, beautiful day here. So we'll see how Sporting KC can respond this week. But how about yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm out here in New York City. Decided to come out a little bit early in advance of the Sporting KC versus NYCFC game, which will take place, of course, as we know, on Friday night here in the Big Apple in the Bronx at Yankee Stadium. That game will be at 6:30 Central Time as Sporting need to try to find a way to get some big points on the road here over this two-game road trip, considering what happened to him this past weekend, which we will talk about, of course, coming up. Now, Carter is at Pinnacle because you're going to be talking to players and coaches today about their chances and game plan for rebounding against that tough 2-0 loss at home against FC Dallas. But you got a busy day today too, Carter, because you've got the International Champions Cup coming up at Children's Mercy Park tonight. I will say this first off, Carter, I'm incredibly envious. I planned this little trip to New York long ago, and before I mapped out the fact that Bayern Munich was going to be coming to Kansas City. And you know, as a proud Polish American myself, Robert Lewandowski is easily my favorite soccer player in the world outside of Kansas City. And I had a chance to interview him on the phone on our morning show a few weeks ago, but the idea of getting to meet him in person would just have been one of the coolest things ever for me, and to watch him play in person. So I'm missing out on that. But you've actually got some pretty cool responsibilities tonight at that competition. Tell us about what you're going to be doing for the ICC tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to be an international pool reporter for some international rights holders. So I'm really looking forward to it. Get to interview both coaches and then player, kind of player of the game type thing for each team after the game. So looking forward to that. But yeah, I know you're bummed, and I thought didn't Robert say something about meeting up with you on that interview on the morning show? So maybe that's a little bummer as well. But AC Milan's got a Polish forward as well, Krzysztof Piątek, maybe the next Lewandowski. So it's kind of a double whammy for you here.
Yeah, thanks for rubbing that in. You're right, because Lewandowski he's still a fantastic player, and I don't think he's showing any signs of slowing down, but he is, just by the math of it and the age, it's, you know, you're wondering if he'll even be a part of the next World Cup cycle. So, yeah, Piątek's a guy that certainly Polish fans are hoping will be good. But, I mean, look, there's going to be a lot of talent on the field tonight at Children's Mercy Park. I know that in the past, especially last year, there was a lot of discontent in the United States about some of the teams that came over to the U.S. because they didn't bring a lot of their best players. But there was a good reason for that. That was right after the World Cup, and those guys had just basically completely exhausted themselves in the month of June for what for them would be the biggest competition in the world. They needed some time off before they got into the regular season. That's not the case this year. I mean, we're seeing a lot of the best players in all those European clubs featuring across this competition right now.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of happens that way every World Cup summer. The friendlies afterwards, it takes a month or so, month and a half or so, for the big names to kind of get back and integrated into the squad. So, yeah, it's a little disappointing. I remember in Kansas City in 2014, we kind of had the same thing as well. But like you said, this summer, not at all the case. Both of these teams bring in full-strength lineups. It's going to be interesting because this is the first game for AC Milan this summer. They've got a new manager coming over from Sampdoria and a few new players. They might have had some transfer news just go down over the past 24 hours or so. So we'll see if Andre Silva is indeed moved over to Monaco or if he's still here with the team. And so some interesting drama with them, but it's their first game. Byron's been over here already, and they've already played in a couple games. So they've got a full-strength squad, and I'm really looking forward to seeing especially them. They're so powerful every single year.
Well, it's a cool opportunity for you, Carter, and I'll say, by the way, I'll lay out the menu for what we've got coming up for you on the show today. I think it's going to be some really interesting stuff. So like I said, I'm here in New York, and I have stopped by the Major League Soccer headquarters, demanding answers of people at the front office here in New York City, but a chance to sit down with Howard Webb, who is the director of PRO, the Pro Referees Association, and I'll tell you what, Carter, it's probably illustrates what a geek I am about the sport of soccer that I could fanboy over a referee, but for my money, Howard Webb is one of the best referees of the last several years across soccer. He's reffed in World Cup finals. Of course, we know he's had a couple big mistakes in World Cup finals as well that he's talked about, but I think one of the most widely respected stand-up class act referees in the world. And I think MLS did a tremendous job of bringing him in to try to head up the Pro Referees Association and really get those referees in the United States and in MLS up to that standard. And we're starting to see some young referees that are starting to get involved in MLS as well. They're trying to bring in a new crop of refs, and they're trying to really increase the quality of the officiating. And I thought it would be really interesting to sit down with him and talk about some of the initiatives. And a lot of times, you know, Carter, I don't know about you, I find, you know, referee conversations a little tedious and boring because, let's be honest, most people hate the referees no matter what they do, especially if their team loses a game. But I do find it to be something that gets brought up amongst MLS fans more than maybe fans in other sports. There's just this constant thought that the officiating in this league, right or wrong, is not at the standard of some of the other leagues, and that's a big challenge for this league going forward. So I don't know about you. I'm really curious to hear what Howard Webb has to say about a lot of that, because I think he's a great person to have brought into this league and try to help in that regard.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and he's an interesting guy. Every interview you hear from him, he's really well-spoken, so I'm looking forward to that as well.
And he also can give us some good insight. Of course, he's the one that's been explaining the process of VAR to all of us. He's also maybe could give us some thoughts on the way that VAR was implemented in the Women's World Cup compared to the way we've seen it implemented in MLS so far, because I think there's been some strong changes in some of those things. So that's a conversation we'll have for you. We're also going to hear from an old friend, Andrew Wiebe, who those of you that are big podcast listeners might listen to the Extra Time podcast from MLS Soccer. He's kind of the quarterback of that show. And he's also a Kansas native, grew up in Wichita, spent time working for Sporting Kansas City back when they were the Wizards, but has been working at the league for quite some time now. And I thought it'd be good to get his perspective just on what he's seen from Sporting Kansas City now for more of that 30,000-foot view compared to right up close and personal the way Carter and I are, but also just his thoughts on the league. And another competition that's starting tonight, Carter, that we could talk about a little bit, and I know that we'll talk about with Andrew Wiebe, is the League's Cup, which begins tonight. Now, this is a new competition between MLS teams and Liga MX teams. Tonight you have the Chicago Fire against Cruz Azul and also the LA Galaxy against Club Tijuana. Tomorrow, in addition to some Canadian championship games as well, in the League's Cup, you've got the Houston Dynamo against Club America, and you have Real Salt Lake against Tigres. Now, this is a competition that is taking the top teams in MLS from the previous season that did not qualify for CONCACAF Champions League against the top teams from Mexico that did not qualify for CONCACAF Champions League. There's a different format, and they're going to expand this thing. They've already announced to 16 teams next year. Look, Carter, this is interesting. We know what's happening here. The MLS is trying to attach itself to Liga MX as much as possible and try to stoke that rivalry and turn that more into a situation where teams from MLS understand the teams from Mexico and try to maybe draw from some of that incredible fan base that exists in Mexico And right now what Mexico is trying to do is they're trying to tap into all of the Mexican fans they have in the United States that spend ridiculous amounts of money on tickets to go watch their teams play anytime they come to the U.S. Curious what you make of this competition as it continues to grow.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the point of it, right? And it's for both of them to try and get into each of these markets. And specifically, you look at the teams that they picked this year, and teams like Chicago and Houston, for them to get a home gate against a Mexican team, you have to imagine it's going to be one of the better attended games of the year for each of these teams. My worry is that it just cheapens the CONCACAF Champions League, and especially with them expanding it next season. It's like almost like they're trying to cut out the Caribbean and Central American teams out of the whole situation and cut them out of the profits. And it's just kind of worrying to me because I'm a Champions League nerd, and Champions League is just based off of merit, and I think it's a fantastic competition. We saw how fun it was with Sporting Kansas City this year. We saw how fun it was for teams like Independiente of Panama. And so that's my one worry, is that this maybe in the future will cheapen the Champions League. I hope they can keep it going without doing that. It'll be fascinating to see how these games line up in the middle of the season right now for the MLS teams, whereas the Liga MX teams are on a break. And does it affect these four MLS teams this season? That's another thing to look out at, as, of course, they have to continue their seasons while this is more like a preseason game for the Mexican teams.
Well, I'm 100% agreement with you on the fact that I'm a CONCACAF Champions League nerd, and I do think that those great competitions become better when you have teams from different countries, not just a two- or three-country competition. And, you know, I think that's also a real competition for a real trophy. This, at least, and some people might correct me from the league office and tell me this isn't the case, but to me, this, for all the world, has the feel of an exhibition, of kind of a contrived competition. And if I'm the fan of a team that's in the middle of a playoff race, I mean, I'll put it this way. If I'm a fan of Sporting Kansas City, I'm incredibly glad that they don't have to deal with this competition right now where they're fighting for their playoff lives. You know, this is just one more thing to distract you from that. Now, the LA Galaxy just came off a huge win against LAFC. They're in the situation where they can try to push for a higher seed in, you know, the Western Conference, and they're going to turn around and play a game against Club Tijuana, and they're being told by the league, you need to prioritize this. You need to try to go win this game. If they go win this game against Club Tijuana, does that make anybody in Mexico decide all of a sudden, oh, wow, MLS is better than us now? I don't think that's the case. I mean, maybe if MLS teams on a routine basis start to beat the Mexican teams, they take it a little more seriously and it matters to them. I think that you're starting to really tax your teams, though, when you do this stuff. So we'll see where it goes. It's certainly something worth watching tonight. There's no Sporting Kansas City on tonight. Of course, you do have the International Champions Cup. But if you want to check it out, Chicago against Cruz Azul at 8:30, LA Galaxy against Club Tijuana after that. Carter, of course, over the weekend, Sporting Kansas City suffered a really tough loss, no sugarcoating it, against FC Dallas 2-0. It was a game they went into thinking it was a really, really big game, and it didn't come off for them. You were on the field with the players after. Did you get a sense for just how hard this game is going to be to rebound from for Sporting Kansas City?
Yeah, it seems, as you'd imagine, that the players were pretty heartbroken about this one in particular. I thought they just had played so well up until that mistake that led to the first goal, and that goal changed the game so significantly. And the players knew they were 4 points back at Dallas. They could claw themselves right back into the playoff scenarios. This one does, I don't know about you, but this one does feel like it's going to be a really tough one to recover from.
Well, particularly when you have two tough road games on the heels of that. At NYCFC on Friday, then at Seattle the week after that. I guess if you want to look on the bright side, you can say, well, they could make some some noise if they can, you know, turn things around and win some games. I did think that the one big bright spot of the game was the return of Roger Espinoza. And Carter, he looked to me just like the Roger Espinoza that we've come to know and love for so long. He was winning balls in the midfield. He was flying from sideline to sideline to snuff out passes and then quickly turn them into goal-scoring opportunities. He was bringing some of that bite back into the midfield and that edge. This team's going to sorely need that if they are going to go on one of those runs. And when you talked to him after the game, I really thought he said everything, all of the right things to you after a tough game like that, in which it's difficult to find the right thing to say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, first of all, he said that being out while the team has been going through some difficulties has been really, really tough for him. He's wanted to be out there kicking every ball with the team, and so it's been really frustrating for him having to watch from the sideline, and he was raring to get back out there. And like you said, I thought that showed against Dallas this weekend for his kind of brief cameo that he came on. He, like you said, looked very much like himself, and he was trying to drag the team forward, which is what Peter Vermes asked him to do when he brought him on, and I think that's what he and the rest of the coaching staff and the rest of the team will be looking towards Roger Espinoza now throughout the remainder of this season. Maybe some fresh legs. Obviously, he's coming off an injury, so it's a little different, but almost like a midseason signing. Can he pull this team forward? And it was interesting to hear him say, you know, in the past, sometimes when stuff like this would happen, they'd lose this game, but then they'd go on and win three the next four, or go on and use a result like this as a catapult to better results over the next three, four, five stretch of games. So that's what he was pointing to in terms of his past experience and his past experience with this team specifically. So it sounds from him like that's what he's going to be looking to do starting this weekend in New York.
Yeah, and Sporting Kansas City do find themselves still just 5 points below the playoff line, so it is all not lost, but they absolutely have got to go on a run. We keep saying it, and the longer we go, the more they run out of time, but they've got to go on a run here to close out 2019 if they want to get into one of those playoff spots. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear from some MLS people here from New York City. I'm in New York. Carter's at the Pinnacle Training Facility, where he's got a busy day today as well. More of the Sporting KC Show right after this.
Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and of course anywhere you get your podcasts. We appreciate you listening that way as well, whether that's Spotify, iTunes, or asking Alexa, as my son does every night when he's on his way to bed. Not suggesting that I put him to sleep with this show, but he certainly will be kept awake by a very interesting conversation we're about to have. Again, I am here in New York City in advance of the Sporting KC versus NYCFC game on Friday night, so I decided to pop on down to the MLS offices, and none other than Howard Webb, one of the most iconic referees in soccer history and now the general manager of Pro, gave me a tour of the offices today, which was really cool, and now we're going to talk some refereeing. Howard, how are you? Thanks a lot for showing me around.
Hi, Nate. Good to see you here in New York, and my pleasure. I mean, it's great to share this this great environment, this great building that I work in every day here at Major League Soccer.
So I mentioned it. Look, you have officiated World Cup finals. You've been in the top leagues in the world. You were brought here to try to bring that standard of officiating to Major League Soccer and to the United States. And boy, I'm sure this is a really open-ended question, but as you've been on the job, can you crystallize what the biggest challenge is that you see in terms of trying to get soccer officiating in the United States where it needs to be?
Yeah. First of all, it's a great challenge. I'm loving being here. I've been here for over 2 years now, initially to implement the VAR project into Major League Soccer. And then as general manager, overseeing all aspects of what we do as an organization. Our mission really here is to try to increase the quality that you see in officiating on Major League Soccer, but we also service United Soccer League and also the NWSL as well. The biggest challenge we face is that our league is getting bigger all the time. Our commissioner keeps bringing in new teams, which is fantastic for for the sport here. As you know, you go to SKC, the atmosphere there is proper. It's a real football atmosphere, soccer atmosphere. There's pressure, there's demands, there's expectation. There's all the things that you'll find in any league that I ever worked in Europe. And people expect to see really efficient referee performances. And they do that in the other 23 venues that we have at the moment as well. And next year it's going to be 26 and then 28. And we need to make sure that we find enough people who have got the ability, technical ability, the experience as well, coming through the different levels to be able to cope with those extra demands that the game is going to put on them as we see this league grow, not only in size, but also in significance. One of the biggest challenges is trying to expose our officials coming through that development pathway to enough games, which is going to give them that experience to be able to cope with those demands. When I came through onto the Premier League in England, you know, it took me 13 years from starting to get into the Premier League. I'd refereed well over 100 games in the Championship and the Football League before I took my first whistle in the Premier League. So I had a lot of experience. Our guys don't really have that structure in place here to prepare them for Major League Soccer. And that's something that we have to work around and work with to try to make sure that when they do go out there, they're able to cope.
Well, and USL is growing as well, but not only is MLS growing in size, it's growing in quality because the money keeps expanding in terms of paying for players, which usually means faster, better players. Is it difficult then to find officials who can find experience at that speed of the game once they step into MLS?
Yeah, because we've got players in MLS that really could play in pretty much any club in any league. I think so. Mm-hmm. We don't have, vast numbers of those sort of players, but we certainly have some players. Then we have other players who are much less experienced. There's a range of talent here for sure. Mm-hmm. We all understand that. It's a really interesting place to be, isn't it? And, and we have different cultures impacting our sport as well, which puts different demands on referees. So, being exposed to high-level officiating is challenging as part of the preparation, at least for officials, So we try to substitute the on-field experience by really exposing our guys to a lot of training, a lot of coaching as they're coming through the USL. And thankfully, the USL is getting bigger as well, and it's getting better in terms of quality. So that helps. But we have really intensive programs for our development officials, for the ones that are already at the top. All of our officials on MLS are full-time professionals. They come together every 2 weeks. They stay together for 5 days or 4 days at a time. Lots of physical training, technical training, psychological training, all the things you'd expect us to do in a modern professional world. So we can just do what we can to upskill them, give them the experience and the skills that they need to be that positive influence on MLS that I'm expecting them to be.
You and I were just chatting via text a couple of weeks ago because a referee appeared that I had not seen before in a game, and I wanted to make sure I got the pronunciation correct. How many new referees are coming online, and what is the goal when it comes to how many more referees you need here in the next few years?
So we've got 24 clubs here this year in MLS. We have 23 referees on our professional list. When you look at the English Premier League, for example, 20 clubs, they have 19 professional referees. So, and they don't have the travel demands that we have. We've got a continent to work in here. So, there's different demands on our people. We need more. This year, we've introduced six officials who came into this season with single figure game experience. Some who have made their debut at the very end of last season or the start of this season. This year seen a bigger influx of new officials than any other year since we as a company came to be in existence in 2013. So that's been challenging. We said to the coaches last year, we said to the owners and the GMs, look, we're going to have to bring some new people in. We just simply need to increase the workforce. We think they are ready as far as can be expected for people of that level of experience by some of the coaching that we've given them in USL, NWSL, by the offline training that we give them, the coaching on a one-on-one basis. Overall, I've been satisfied. I've been pleased with what we've seen with some of these new young referees. They're working to an ethos that we instill in them about recognising when to manage the game, knowing when to be strong, but knowing also when to have, to show the empathy for the game, going in with the right mentality, of, you know, having courage when you need to make an unpopular decision that has to be made to protect the players, to protect the image of the game, but also stepping out of the game when you can do, when the players want to play. And yeah, so far those new guys that have come in, like you've recognised, have done a pretty solid job and will only get better the more experienced that they become.
We're visiting with Howard Webb here in New York City. So I had it brought up to me once that one of the challenges in officiating American soccer is very similar to the challenge that the United States men's national team has with trying to develop an identity, because it is such a vast country and there are so many different influences. First of all, there's just a vast difference in the culture, maybe to the East Coast, to the Deep South, or to the West Coast or the Midwest. On top of that, there are influences in this game from South America and Central America and Europe. And almost everybody has a different idea of how the game should be played. You go to a country like Germany or England, and you might have a more concise idea of, this is the way we play the game, this is the way we want the game officiated. When you have officials who come from all these different backgrounds in a league that has all these different backgrounds, how difficult is it to try to establish an identity of, this is how we want you guys to referee a game?
That's a really, really good question, Nate, and it's something that I kind of wrestle with all of the time. You're absolutely right. When you go to some of these established European leagues, which are pretty mature, they've been around a long time, they have players from all over the world, of course, but those players, I saw that myself when I refereed over in the Premier League, those players adjust a little bit. They adjust to what's expected over there. So, you know, there's a certain culture, the player adapts a little bit to that culture. It's what the fans expect, what the media expect, and you can therefore know what to expect when you go out there to referee. Here, the league is still developing. It's still gaining maturity. It's not quite established a true identity in terms of exactly how the game is going to be played. It's influenced by all of the things you've talked about, people coming in from different continents, different countries, where the game's played slightly differently. We've got coaches from different places as well. If you speak to the coaches, they're kind of like not consistent with what they expect either, because you've got some who want the game called this way, some who want it called another way. So then trying to be successful from an officiating point of view is quite challenging, because if you try to please everybody, you're simply going to fail. I think what we set out to do really is primarily to consult as much as we can do in terms of what's expected. Where there's common ground, focus on those issues where everybody agrees that would make our game better here. Don't react too much to individual opinions. If you did that, you'd be flip-flopping all over the place. Where there's common ground, focus on that. Put in some points of emphasis that we can all agree are good for the game. And then try to stay true to that and stay focused to that. And overarching all of it is, you know, protecting the players, trying to protect the players to keep them on the field, you know, free from injury, and protecting the image of the game. That's what everybody in the world tries to do. Here, points of emphasis, you know, trying to keep the game flowing. We are in an entertainment business after all. It's a competitive place where we are in the sporting environment. So, you know, dealing with players who delay restarts, kicking the ball away after the whistle's been blown, carrying it away, you know, taking the time on substitutions, all those sort of things. Dealing with persistent offenders, those who want to break the game up all the time by committing fouls or targeting players that want to play. That's something that I hear consistently from all coaches and from GMs and owners. You know, our players want to play and the opponents are trying to stop us from playing. Everybody says the same thing. So, you know, we try to educate our officials about, you know, how to identify persistent offenders, what can be expected in a game. They all get scouting reports before the games about the way teams set up, about how they defend on set pieces, about which players have been targeted in the past with persistent fouling. So they go in there hopefully with an open mind, but also with enough information to be able to, you know, deliver an effective performance, because they have that element of sort of like research going into a game. And then some of the things as well, like holding in the penalty area, that's something we've tried to be strong on. But the game keeps changing, and actually we've seen less holding since the advent of VAR. We know we don't see quite so much wrestling in the penalty area that I used to be faced with dealing in the Premier League at every corner when it was all in wrestling. Well, you know, I think the advent of VAR has helped in that respect. So we're seeing the game develop and change. And what I do say to the referees all the time is, come on, let's be a positive influence on this game. Let's be strong. Let's be focused. Let's be calm, courageous when we need to be, but also understanding where we can manage things for the good of the game.
Well, you just got bonus points from Peter Vermees because you referenced delaying restarts, and that's his biggest pet peeve. He brings it up to me all the time. So he wants to see that continue to be enforced as we're visiting with Howard Webb. How much does it drive you crazy when an idiot like me up in the broadcast booth has at it at a referee and maybe isn't exactly correct on what we're criticizing the officials for?
Nate, you're one of the better ones. I'm not saying it because you're here in the office in New York and the others aren't. But I think you guys do a good job, yourself and Matty Lawrence, who I refereed quite a few times. In fact, I actually occasionally play five-a-side football with Matt on a Monday night, actually. Okay. And he's still got a good touch on him. But I cautioned him many times when his touch wasn't so good when he was playing professional. I think what we try to do, what we endeavour to do at least, is try to assist in the understanding of the role that we play in the game. And you know, I don't expect people to to fully understand the way the laws of the game are applied. I don't expect them to know chapter and verse of the law book. What we try to do is try to give people an understanding of how we apply the laws, how we interpret the laws, because that benefits everybody if you've got an understanding of what we're doing. And much of what we do in terms of that application of the law is what comes down from FIFA. And we try to be consistent with what we see in the global game. We have a lot of interactions with colleagues in different parts of the world as well. And we try to make sure that we are pretty consistent. When we went out with the VAR project, one of the biggest important things that we did is try to manage expectations. I think there was a feeling that when we went down that road that would kill all conversation and debate and controversy. And it hasn't done that because our sport is so subjective. And we quite often send out clips to the coaches across MLS. The ones that are not so clear cut, the ones that are open to interpretation, we'll ask a range of coaches, what's your opinion? Should this be a red card, a yellow card? Is it even a foul? And the range of responses that we get back in that exercise just demonstrates the subjectivity. Mm-hmm. So if you've got one coach saying it's a clear red and one saying it's only just a foul, as a referee, how do you come out with the right answer when there's so much interpretation and subjectivity? So I think one of the things that we try to do is set expectations, manage expectations, and say, look, don't expect to always agree with everything that we do, even with VAR, because sometimes there is no right or wrong answer. All we'll do is try to get involved when it's clearly wrong. One of those situations where there is little subjectivity, where any reasonable-minded person would say, yeah, that's an error, and we expect VAR to get involved. So that educational piece is really an ongoing part of our work and an important part.
Well, there was certainly a controversy with VAR's usage in the Women's World Cup this time around, and something that I found very discomforting was the usage of VAR when it came to goalkeepers coming off their line on penalties. It seemed like it got down to the pedantic at that point for me, and it seemed to fly in the face of that spirit of what you're talking about clear and obvious and really trying to fix big mistakes. And all of a sudden we were overturning calls that I think had they never been reviewed, you wouldn't have heard a peep from the other side. Oh, this goalkeeper was 6 inches off her line at the moment that the ball was kicked. I understand the language is changing going forward across the board in that regard. Do you have any concerns about the way VAR was implemented at the Women's World Cup, and will that trickle into what we see going forward in MLS?
One of the challenging things that we're facing with the use of VAR is that now we can use the video recordings to prove something factually, so whereas previously a goalkeeper that moves a couple of inches off the line would have been really hard to detect in real time, mm-hmm. By the on-field officials. Now, obviously, we can pause the action and we can see whether or not the goalkeeper has moved at the moment that the ball is kicked. And the laws of the game that were used in France in the Women's World Cup are the new version, the 2019-2020 version, which we won't use until next year in MLS because we started on the old version. The laws of the game change on June the 1st each year. And we started with the old version, so we're going to continue. And the old version said that referees would only get involved with goalkeeper movement when it was blatant. So that gave us that ability to step in when it was really clear and unfair. But now it's a challenge, isn't it? It's a dilemma, because if you can prove that there's a breach of the laws of the game, because that word blatant has gone, any movement by the goalkeeper with both feet off the line is an offence now. When you can prove it, at what point do you, what do you allow and what don't you allow? There's no small or big encroachment, really. There's no small or big offside. It either is or it isn't. So it's going to be interesting to see how that evolves. We're quite fortunate in that we've got a few months to see how other leagues implement it around the world before we have to do the same next year. One of the other challenges that we have in MLS, quite candidly speaking, is that we don't often work with the same camera coverage that other leagues do or that they had at the World Cup. So we often don't actually have a camera really directly in line with the goal line on a few network broadcasts we do. But if you don't have a camera bang in line, it's sometimes difficult to be sure if the keeper's moved. In the same way with offside, we only work to a clear and obvious threshold at the moment with offside. We don't at the moment use offside line technology. We say to the assistant referee, you make the call on the day, we'll go with that call unless when we look at the video replay later, if we can see it's clearly wrong, we'll step in. But if it's really close, if it's difficult to be sure, we'll just go with the on-field call. We'll default back to the decision that you made as being the correct one unless we can prove you're wrong. And that's quite useful, isn't it? Because that means that we're only really capturing those really clear and obvious ones, the ones we've talked about, the ones that are, you know, horrible decisions. You don't mean to make a horrible decision, but sometimes you look back and think, oh, why did I make that decision? Well, loads of times I did that. But sometimes you just, in the speed of the game, you miss it. If it's really close, we stick with the on-field call. When you've got technology that can prove it, then it, 1 inch, 2 inches can make a difference. So that's what we need to wrestle with. We need to work out how far down that road we're going to go. We'll watch closely what happens in other leagues in the second part of this year in terms of the encroachment by the goalkeeper, and then we'll make a judgment about how we're going to pitch our involvement.
All right, my final question. We could cover this stuff all hour, but we have to take a break here, so I'm going to ask you one last question. You mentioned playing some five-a-side with Matt Lawrence, but also officiating him in the championship. I've had the pleasure of playing some over 30 league soccer in Kansas City with Matty. And when he's on the broadcast, he's the most articulate, diplomatic, straightforward guy. But when I've seen him on the soccer field, even in the over 30 league, I see the old Leeds United captain come out of him a little bit and some different language. What was the worst he ever gave it to you in a game, either as a ref or when you're playing five-a-side with him?
The last time I played five-a-side, he hit a shot from about 40 yards and like a rocket into the top corner. And I thought, yeah, fair enough. I mean, you know, you can still play a little bit. I've actually got, if you go to my parents' house back in the UK, my dad has got a spare bedroom and lots of pictures and balls and of my career, you know, a proud dad as you can imagine. And one of the pictures on the wall is Matty Lawrence in a Millwall shirt against Cardiff City. And I'm in the middle of this group of about 12 players all trying to get at me. And at the very front of this pack of Millwall players is Matt Lawrence, his veins bulging out of his neck and his eyes sort of like glaring at me, screaming in my face about some ridiculous offside decision or something. You know what I mean? There was clearly not a mistake on my part. So Matt is forever he has a permanent presence in my parents' house. And I said to my dad, why have you got that picture up there of Matty Lawrence in my face? And he said, I just want to, you know, to remind myself how difficult the job was that you did every week, Howard, and what a great job you did. But by and large, like you say, a bit of a pussycat off the field, but on it, it's certainly a big, strong competitor. And it's good memories looking back.
I hope it was one of those pictures where he's missing both of his front teeth and just the fangs at you. That's my favorite image of Matt Lawrence. Howard, this has been great. Thank you so much for the time. And we really appreciate everything that you're doing to try to, you know, to move along the officiating at the MLS level. And thanks for showing me around the offices as well.
My pleasure. Enjoy the game on Friday. And hopefully you'll not be talking about the referee.
That's right. That is Howard Webb. He is the general manager of Pro. We are here at the MLS offices. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to an old friend, Andrew Wiebe, who works for MLS now, but cut his teeth in Kansas City back when it was the Wizards, the native of Wichita, Kansas. That's right after this on the Sporting Kansas City show. Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's on iTunes, Spotify, Asking Alexa. And I'm a big podcast guy, so I'm really excited to talk to our next guest because He's like a bi-weekly companion for me. Andrew Wiebe, one of the hosts of the Extra Time podcast, and that does not in any way, shape, or form encompass all of his responsibilities here at MLS. But I like to think of him as one of our own because he was in Kansas City covering the Wizards back in those days. And he's also a Wichita, Kansas native. And my Ark City, Kansas roots, I could tell you all about the Wichita Wings versus the Comets back in the day. So it's exciting to talk to Andrew. Andrew, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. I want to know what you do while you listen to Extra Time, because that's always like Alexi Lawless runs. And he's like, hey, I was on my run. I heard you guys say this. That's BS, yeah. Or I agree. Yeah. What's your thing? Is it running? Is it in the commute? Is it making dinner? What are we doing here?
It is all of the above, depending on what time of day the podcast comes out, what I'm doing. I'm a big lawn mowing guy.
Living that Kansas dream. I can see beautiful, perfect, symmetrical lines in my head. It's been years and years and years, but that's good nostalgia for me.
Yeah, you don't get. I heard you have a yard now at your place.
It's mostly weeds. I've pulled a lot of them. Yeah. Weeds and glass, yeah. Actually, large, dangerous shards of glass that my nearly 2-year-old is extremely fascinated by. So I've cleaned that out. Brooklyn life is great, but ultimately, you'd always be a Kansan. Wichita made me. Lawrence helped me grow. Kansas City really launched me to where I am today. And I can thank going to Community America Ballpark, covering those Wizards teams as they transitioned, by the way, to the Peter Vermese era, the building of the stadium, the building of Sporting Kansas City, the rise of all the players, many of whom are still the core of the team today. I can really pinpoint that. I mean, that's my launching pad. So when I think about what I'm doing, I always think back to Cab, Peter, Graham Zusi being drafted, Matt Beasler being drafted, Kai Kamara doing his thing, Jimmy Nielsen with the hat on, with the sun blaring in his eyes. I mean, those were amazing days, and I can't believe a decade later that we're here talking at the MLS headquarters, where I've just kind of found myself entrenched for almost a decade now.
It's crazy to think that's been a decade. Yeah, I find mowing the yard to be cathartic because you and I both produce basically air for a living, yes. Nothing tangible, so I get to look back
at
the yard.
You've accomplished something. Yeah. You get to look at it. Yeah, you have a lemonade back in my day, or a would be a beer now, and just think, yeah. I did that. That's beautiful. Yeah. I take a shower, next thing, the whole day is good.
And if I do it while listening to Extra Time, I'm actually working while doing my yard work because you guys help me keep up to date on the rest of the league, and I love that because, you know, at the beginning of the week I get to recap all the stuff that happened on Thursday. I get to look forward to the weekend to come, but it seems like the whole operation has grown so much. There's more and more voices I hear on that show. All the content that I see you guys put out on MLSsoccer.com. You mentioned being here for a decade. You put in perspective for me. We see it in Kansas City just how big Sporting has gotten from 10 years ago to now. What about these league offices? What's it like now compared to maybe when you first started here?
I think when I first started, I was in such a different position because I just come in and I'm a 25-year-old kid that's like, oh, my God, I might be able to live my dream. Somebody actually wants to pay me to talk about, think about, write about soccer full time. And I got here and the digital office and the main offices were separate. And the digital office was kind of in this, I don't even know how to describe it. It was almost like a clubhouse. And it was myself, and if you remember back in the days, you know, listeners that have been paying attention to MLS for that long, you know, Simon Borg, the content creator mastermind, like all these, Nick Fershaw, Greg Lawless, all these guys, and we're all just kind of in a little powwow all the time trying to get people interested in Major League Soccer in this game. And now it's just a huge operation. You know, I almost never see that side of it. I'm in a studio all day. We're thinking about how to produce content that we never even imagined we might do at the time, let alone have the resources or the space or even the ideation that it might get to the point one day where we're going to be doing legitimate pre- and post-game shows in a huge studio with a production staff and everything else. And I think that speaks to the growth of the league, where it's come from then to now. And if you're a Wizards fan, now Sporting KC fan, you know, you were at Community America Ballpark. You walked around the city and saw nobody in your gear. Mm-hmm. You walked around the city and asked people about your team if you liked them, and they probably had no idea what you were talking about, let alone know a player or have been to a game or have it be like an integral part of who they are as a person. And that's all now true, and I love coming back to Kansas City. I love sitting in the stands at Children's Mercy. I like just looking around and thinking, oh, my God, how far has this come? How far will it go? Because we are still in the early stages of the growth, in my opinion. Sporting Kansas City has done an incredible thing. they'll do incredible things in the future. It's only going to scale up, and that goes for this office here in New York City. That goes for every club around the league, everyone that's popping up, coming in. I mean, Austin FC announced a new coach today. Mm-hmm. Josh Wolf, who Wizards fans will know, and Josh and I knew each other back in the day. I wrote some things he didn't love. He told me about it, and it was a formative moment for me. So now to see him come this far and get a head coaching job in this league is incredible. I think growth would be my theme for any interview, any conversation I have about this league, about these offices, about what we do here. I mean, it all kind of comes together. It's going one way, and we should all be proud of that because we helped build it.
Yeah, we just had Josh on the pregame show because he was going into the Legends, Sporting Kansas City Legends this past weekend.
This was like the fantasy camp that you were a part of? Was he working on the left foot?
Yeah.
You know?
I'm working on a toe injury, by the way, because I got suckered into playing in part of that thing. So we don't need to go there because you and I could both compare our stupid soccer-related injuries.
Yeah, we can Warriors.
So you mentioned something, though, there about the growth of it and where Sporting Kansas City has gotten to. And there's that old cheesy line I remember seeing in my high school, you know, English teacher's office that said, you know, success is a journey, not a destination. And I think that's really appropriate for where Sporting Kansas City are as a club right now, because for a while there, they were the gold standard in MLS in terms of, hey, this is where you could be. If you build a brand new state-of-the-art stadium, you can rebrand, or the new clubs that were coming online, this is what you should aspire to be. And other clubs have done that, and they've improved upon it, which I remember Cliff Illig saying, look, that's what we want to have happen. We want people to look at what we did and say, okay, now let's take it to the next step. We're seeing that with, for example, LAFC. You see a lot of similarities with the stadium, but they've gone another step. New teams keep coming online. They keep bringing in star players and doing even fancier stadiums. So for a club like Kansas City, as you take the 30,000-foot view, we're here up close and in person, mm-hmm. What's next for a team like Sporting Kansas City? How do they stay relevant? How do they stay on the cutting edge of this ever-expanding and growing league?
I think they're doing it in large part. And I think you can look at Pinnacle. I think you can look at a lot of the infrastructure that they're building, because ultimately that will be the launching pad for them in the future. Right now we're in a place with Sporting Kansas City, at least from where I'm sitting, and I pay close attention to the club. My brother's a fan, yada, yada, yada. It's where I got my start, and Peter really helped me understand the game. I just think it's a cycle. And you had one of the most remarkable, unique, incredible cycles in this league that I've ever seen, of consistency, of results, of trophies, of maybe even, batting a little bit above expectations, mm-hmm. year after year after year after year. That run should be praised. But it should be understood that at some point a run has to come to an end. And the way this league works with all the roster rules and salary cap machinations is that at some point you're going to have to turn the page. And I think some of the moves that Peter put together to try to turn that page, whether it's Fontas or whoever, you could go through the roster and say, okay, this is the guy that was going to replace this guy and how we move on. They haven't all hit. And the results have suffered a little bit because of it. And it's understandable. Think back to some of those draft classes who came in. And remember, these players don't really come through the draft right now. A Graham Zusi, national teamer for 7-8 years, goes to a World Cup. A Matt Beisler, same state. A Roger Espinoza, who goes to England, who plays for Honduras in World Cups, who wins an FA Cup, comes back here, helps them win more trophies. I mean, formational players that just can't be plucked off the vine and replaced. And at some point, I think Sporting Kansas City is going to have to spend a little bit more money. You mentioned LAFC. One of the differences is Carlos Vela. Carlos Vela can cover up a lot. Now, the flip side of that is you hit it right with Walker Zimmerman. You got it right throughout the rest of the roster with some of the other recruitment. I think Peter will get it right. I just think this is a year in which some cracks have opened up, and now more than ever, it's clear that that group isn't going to be the group probably to drive the team into the next level. So who are those players going to be? Are they going to be Busios and Jalen Lindsays? Is there another crop of incoming transfers that you have to look to do that? How much money is the ownership group willing to spend on fees and on salary? Do they want to be among the top 25% of on salary player spenders in this league? Do they think they can do it through the academy? I mean, those are all questions that Peter, I'm sure, has an extremely detailed plan for. But a cycle is ending, and it can be tough. Other teams have dealt with that, have had a lot of down years. Sporting Kansas City, you should thank your lucky stars if you're a supporter of, have not. From the time I left until now, it has been complete consistency, challenging for trophies, winning trophies, being at the top of the level. Again, being maybe better than expectations from a neutral perspective. It's honestly been a blessed period of soccer in Kansas City, and there's no guarantee it'll come again. That's the thing. That's the same for every team. So enjoy the last decade and try to figure out where you're going, and I'm sure Peter knows.
We've got Andrew Eby with us, and I know you've got to get going, so we'll wrap this thing up here. I just want to ask you one more thing. Tonight we have a newer iteration of a competition, this League's Cup, where there's going to be some teams from Mexico taking on some teams from MLS. This is not part of CONCACAF Champions League, and we know also that this is a competition that's not going anywhere. It's going to expand. Some people look at it and say, why are we doing this when we just had the CONCACAF Champions League? Is this a cash grab? Some people will ask as well. But I think that for the future of the two leagues, Liga MX and MLS, I think we're seeing are going to become more and more intertwined. What would you say to those people that are asking those questions? Maybe what's the sales pitch you'd give for why we should really get into this competition as it starts tonight?
The sales pitch is this. If you want soccer to grow in this country, money is important. Like, let's not beat around the bush on that point. That shouldn't sell you, though. What should sell you is the fact that MLS against Liga MX is fun. It's fun, and teams play a ton of friendlies every summer. So those are talking about, oh, schedule congestion, this, or, hey, this is going to make it tough on teams and coaches. It's all true, but it was all happening before. I personally would prefer Liga MX MLS over, say, Freiburg MLS or Aston Villa MLS. These are our neighbors. These are our closest competitors. These are the teams. This is the league that we have to compete with and beat to be at the place in the region and then the world that we want to be. So to get more cracks, to get more opportunities to do that, to get more chances to become familiar as fans and as cultures, and also ultimately, yes, because cash matters, as executives at the top level, you can see the relationships being built and the growth there between these two leagues as far as collaboration. I mean, this is a logical step. For those who don't like it, I get it. I understand the cynic's perspective on this one. I just don't share it personally because when I think about soccer, I'm just like, what's going to be the most fun for me? And these games, I think, are going to be fun. We'll see. Starting tonight, starting Wednesday, MLS has to perform. That's a big part of this. If this becomes semifinals on Liga MX, well, then it's probably not going to be driving things the way that we want it to be driven, the way that fans want to consume it. Like, MLS has to step up and compete and do better. And, oh, by the way, this winter, there's a big negotiation coming that may help MLS teams do that from a salary perspective and a cap perspective. So wait to see what happens there. Have fun with the first one. Know that it's going to grow. And let's hope it becomes something that's as integral as in our calendar as the Open Cup is, or as some of these other tournaments that we really hold dear to our hearts, because there's a lot of potential and it could be a lot of fun.
Andrew, thanks so much. It's a lot of fun getting to see you here. We love seeing the success you're having with MLS. Don't forget about us back in Kansas City. I brought your son a stuffed blue here, you know, a little plush. I feel like every kid needs some plush, and your kid needs some plush that represents Kansas City, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. My brother's working real hard, sending lots of different gear over for Sporting. I told him that Cameron's his allegiances are open until he makes the decision. So any and all gear he'll rock. He'll always be an MLS fan, but Sporting Kansas City, early lead here with the plush blue. If it can compete with his walruses, you might have a chance, but not much does right now.
Well, we'll see if it does. Andrew, thanks so much for the time. That's Andrew Wiebe. We will take a break. When I come back, Carter Augustine will join us from Pinnacle. We'll preview Friday night's match from here in New York as Sporting KC take on NYCFC right after this. Back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. We thank you for listening on Sports Radio 810 WHB, on Spotify, on iTunes, on Ask Alexa, however you go about getting your podcast. We really appreciate it. And it's time now, Carter, to focus on New York City FC, a tough place to play, a team that right now find themselves in fourth place in the East, but second in the East when it comes to points per game. They haven't looked like that really exciting, dominant team. You know, remember when we saw them at the beginning of last year, we thought this is going to be the best team in the Eastern Conference. It didn't turn out that way last year. They're a contender this year, but I think that, look, they struggled to beat the Colorado Rapids at home in their last game.
What do you think for Sporting KC? What does the prognosis look like to try to get a result in New York City at the Bronx?
Well, I think we've seen teams that can hit them on the counter have been really effective, right? I think Portland did a good job of that. That's not really been Sporting Kansas City's MO over the past few years, so I'm curious if they may be trying to address it that way. Such a narrow field, I wonder if NYCFC fans get tired of opposition teams talking about it, but it definitely is a story. Every time you play there, it's just a completely different field dimension. And I always just remember back to Matt Beiser throw and Ike Opara header to beat them there a few years ago. So, you know, maybe does a long throw come out here in New York City? But that's the thing that I've seen, and that, or at least Matt Lawrence definitely has seen, and he's pretty well familiar with them, is that if you can be organized, compact, and catch them on the counter, that's a good way to go about things. And we've seen, you know, Sporting KC has had some success over the past month with finding Gerso over the top and in behind teams with those balls over the top. So I have to imagine he will be a huge key piece to this Sporting Kansas City approach to NYCFC.
Yeah, and for Sporting Kansas City, they will get Elie back from suspension, so hopefully he's rested and ready to go. But Felipe Gutierrez will miss this game because of suspension. We'll have to wait and see if Roger Espinoza is fit enough to be in the starting 11 for this game. Otherwise, the midfield could be an interesting little rotation there. And also, Carter, I'm going to be interested to see what happens at the striker position. Johan Quaze has been starting there the last couple of games, had a couple of goals, but was relatively ineffective in this last game against FC Dallas. Does Christian Namath get another shot? Where does Peter Vermees go from there? I think is going to be a really interesting question to see on Friday night.
Definitely. Like you said, not Johan Quaze's most effective game. Is Christian Namath motivated now? Having spent some time on the bench, will that give him the fire and maybe see him fighting for balls? That was kind of what Peter Vermees called him out for, leading to him being benched for Quaze. We'll see. Does he factor up there? It's a really big dilemma for Peter Vermees and company, and Johnny Russell now back and available. Does he become a factor yet again? Is he going to be an automatic starter opposite Jerson on the flank? Where does Daniel Shalloway fit in? This team, they're going to need to score, you figure, against NYCFC. And that's a huge question and something that I'm looking forward to this week, seeing in training what they're going to do, because, yeah, it's a very, very big question for Peter Vermees.
Well, and for NYCFC, this will be the first time Sporting will have faced them with no David Villa as a part of the team. Now, they brought in Hebert, who is a Brazilian player. He's got 8 goals on the season. We know Maxi Morales with 9 assists is a dangerous little player playing in the number 10 slot, so they still have some firepower. And Carter, Alex Ring is back from suspension. He served a yellow card suspension last game for NYCFC. And I don't know about you, I feel like he's one of the more underrated players in the league, the way that he covers ground and kind of does the dirty work for New York City.
Yeah, that's a big return for them. Getting Ring back, I agree with you. He is a tidy player. It helps protect the back line and good at recovering possession and good at keeping things moving. Hebert's been pretty good, but I think he pointed to the main man, Maxi Morales, for them, and he's a real big-time playmaker, big-time creator. So getting Elie back, I think, should be a huge boost for Sporting Kansas City. Fortunate for them that Felipe Gutierrez is out suspended, so they won't get that midfield trio that started the season, Gutierrez, Espinosa, and Elie. But at least you got Espinosa back now to help cover that Gutierrez is out. But would have liked to see all three of them in there. I think a big key for Sporting Kansas City, and it's going to be that midfield battle with the likes of Ring and Morales buzzing in and around there. It's I think if they can cut off the service to Morales, maybe they can cut off that NYCFC creativity and then maybe cause some consternation among the home fans and among the home team as they if they can cut off Morales. I think that's going to be an excellent way to try and get into that game.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us, Carter. Thanks so much for the time. I know you got a busy day today, and good luck out there at the ICC doing all the interviews afterwards, and we'll see you here in New York here in just a few days.
Yes, sir. Good luck to you as well, and enjoy NYC.
We will do so. That is Carter Augustine in Kansas City. I'm Nate Bucati out here in New York getting ready for Sporting KC versus NYCFC on Friday night. 6:30 kickoff. Our TV pregame coverage begins at 6 o'clock on Fox Sports Kansas City Plus and the Fox Sports Go app. Of course, you can listen to the game right here on your home for Sporting Kansas City Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. For the Sporting Kansas City Show, we'll see you next week.